Welcome to Get Wealthy Wednesdays with your host, Fred Brandon, where we speak with industry leaders to increase the knowledge of building generational wealth while creating a platform for small business owners to promote their brands. Hello, hello, everyone. How is everyone doing this evening? Welcome to tonight's episode of Get Wealthy Wednesday. Our focus is to increase the knowledge of building generational wealth by speaking with industry leaders within our community. Tonight's episode is brought to you thanks to More Owned Business. Go to More Owned Businesses where they promote products and services. By Black-owned businesses, making it easier to build and support our community from within. I would also like to give a special shout out to our sponsors for season one. Thank you. I appreciate everything that you've done for this first season of Get Wealthy Wednesday. Your support helped this show to continue and grow, and all the sponsors can be found there. All of their businesses can be found on moreownedbusinesses.com. All right. We would like to welcome our guests. Hello, Courtney. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. So Courtney Richardson, also known as the Ivy Investor, everywhere, I believe. If you're not following her yet, go do so today. She has a wealth of knowledge. She's an attorney. She's a former stockbroker. She's a member of the Black Wealth Project here on YouTube. She just has a lot of things going on. Welcome. And how are you doing this evening?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. All right. Let's get this all out of here so we can get everything going on. So I know I gave everyone a little description about, you know, what you do and who you are, but I know I did not touch everything. So can you give us a little more information about who you are and some of the things that you do?
So thank you so much. My name is Courtney Richardson. I am the founder of the Ivy Investor. I have been running the Ivy Investor in some way, shape, or form since 2014. I am a practicing attorney. I graduated, I've been practicing, I guess, for about 8 years. Yes, about 8 years now. It feels like it went so quick. But before I started practicing law, I was a stockbroker. I was a high net worth advisor. I worked for Merrill Lynch. And then, you know, we all know the story about what happened in 2008. I was laid off in 2009 and then decided to go to law school. And then as I was kind of transitioning through, graduated, kind of got my first job, didn't really love it, but I had a lot of my friends, you know, I needed kind of an outlet. And a lot of my friends were asking me questions. They're like, hey, I'm transitioning out of this job. You know, how do I do a rollover? Should I do a rollover? Should I just cash it out? You know, I'm about to have a kid. Do we need to do a 529? What's a 529? So we were having so many different questions, and the conversations that I started to have were, okay, I was like, my friend really has no idea what any of these things are. So before I could even give them advice about what they should do or how they should go about it, they should at least understand what it is. So that's how the Ivy Investor started. Cause I was a billing attorney, and I was like, I don't have time to sit and educate you the entire on everything, you know, right, about investing. I did it, but I said, you know what? I'll give you this blog, give you like a overview, and then from there we can work from there. And then that's kind of how it started, and then it just blew up from there.
Cool. That is wonderful. And so in your practice in law, what exactly is your specialty, or is it?
So my day is that I'm a government attorney, more or less.
Okay.
I do during the day. Now, I have a certificate in estate planning, so I do a lot of conversations about estate planning. I do I think that's pretty much what we do a lot. Estate planning. Every so often we talk about entity formation. I have an LLM in taxation, which is the degree above the JD.
Okay. See, I knew this was going to be an interesting conversation because I've been following you on like Instagram and all other places. I'm like, where do I start? You know, I was trying to figure out questions to ask. I'm like, I don't know. I might have like 50 questions for you, but you know, I'm gonna just, we're gonna let it go. We're gonna let it ride tonight. One of the things that, you know, what we do here and what I've been doing for the last, this is episode 10. Can't believe it already. So episode 10, we've been talking about generational wealth. You know, some of the things that a lot of us in our community don't really think about. And one of the things that I wanted to touch on is estate planning. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you work in that field as well. Can you give us a little breakdown on about that? Because I think a lot of us don't think about it. You know, some of us think that, I don't really have any money, so ain't no reason for me to think about it. Why I have a will? Why I have anything? Because, you know, I'm broke and all this other, you know, all those like crazy things that people really don't think about. Can you give us a little insight into, you know, the reasons why we should start thinking about estate planning as it pertains to generational wealth?
Oh, that's a good one. I think there is some practical aspects and then there's generational wealth aspects. So on the practical side, you do have something. Unless you are homeless with nothing to your name, you got something. And even if your something is a broken lamp, somebody's going to want it. People are going to fight over it. Just know that. You know, and I think that once people understand, and I also feel like when we talk about estate planning, when we talk about death, we expect everybody to hold hands and sing kumbaya. No, they're probably going to fight because they're grieving. Let's be very honest. They're grieving. They're dealing with that emotion. And then they're also dealing with other stuff. So I share that to say, you know, that's the practical side, is that somebody's going to want your stuff. Just make life really easy for them. So that's the first thing. On the side of generational wealth, especially when it comes to Black people, is that we have wealth that's in a generation. But the problem is that we have problems transferring it to the next generation.
Right.
By not having a will. You know, we're forced to kind of allow the government to tell our family who's getting what.
Right.
And that's called intestacy. So when you die with a will, it's called testate because you're a testator when you write a will, testate. Yeah. And then if you die without a will, it's in, which is without in Latin, testate. So those are the two things. And a lot of people are just like, oh, I don't really have anything. But if you have a bank account, it's going to go through your will. I'm going to talk about stuff goes through your will and we'll talk about the other stuff. So bank account goes through your will. You got a car, goes through your will. It's like goes through, you know, that it's either going to go through your will or the government is going to tell your family who gets it.
Right.
I don't really trust the government to spend my money. I don't know about you. I've seen how they've been giving it away, not saying that people don't need it, but I just see like, and it's more so the corporations, I'm looking at them like, y'all going to give that all that money to the corporations though? For real? Right. You know, when we looked at the Tax Cut and Jobs Act in 2017, I was like, so you're going to cut the corporate tax rate, but my effective tax rate is going to go up? So we'll just put that there. But we'll park that for a second. But so I say, like, you know, I see the way the government spends their money. I'm like, I don't want to be like you. You know, we talk about the Joneses. Why don't we look at the U.S. government? We want to talk about somebody and spending money that they don't got.
Right, exactly.
That being said, but each state is actually different. So that's one of the things that a lot of people don't understand is that when we talk about property, when a friend of mine has property, she was going through buying a property in Detroit. And I was like, all right, cool. Well, that's great. She's like, can you look at the contract? I was like, I can look at it. But one, I don't practice in Detroit. But two, there are certain things that each state has going on with their property that may not be with other states. So I was like, hey, but this is all like a state by state issue.
Right.
So just kind of keep those things in mind. Also, when we're thinking about generational wealth is that, and what I've noticed, especially with Black people, is that we moved up from the South at some point. So my family, we got money, we got stuff down the South and we don't, and it's a big hullabaloo to deal with who's going to take care of it, who's dealing with it. And I'm like, is somebody paying the taxes on it though? Like,
you know,
so that's the practical. So that's my great grand. So my great Yes, my great-grandfather, because my father's grandfather, you know, he had land down in South Carolina, and I'm sitting there looking at everybody like, did you guys, what, and he lived to be 90. Mm-hmm. So he lived to be 90. He like lived into the early to mid 90s, but he passed away in California. So because he passed away in California, we had to open an estate. Well, and he lived there for a couple of years. So we had to open an estate in California. So there had to be something open in LA County for him. And then we had to basically transfer those documents to North Carolina, where his property is, in the county where his property was. And it's just like, nobody did it. So here we are 30 plus years later, looking at each other like, who's going to take care of this? So these are the practical reasons why. I mean, even I'm an estate attorney, so you expect my family to have it together. No. I can only count for me and my house. That's it. But again, if what happens with somebody, if the county sheriff sells the property that we have down there, then we lose it. You know, we may be entitled. Some places say that you're entitled to excess proceeds, which is basically over and above what's sold. So say a property sold for $20,000, maybe it was $10,000. So you have excess proceeds of another $10,000.
Right.
So in Pennsylvania, you get those excess proceeds, but you still have to, you have to go to petition to get them. So you have that. But there's other states that are like, no, we get everything.
See, what? and that's the issue. I think a lot of us, we don't think about that. We don't put those type of thoughts in our brain. You know, it's, some of us have that mentality. You know, I rose from nothing. You got to start from nothing. You know, and it's like, okay. You know, this is not, you know, this is not the way it works. You know, we're not supposed to be, every generation shouldn't be starting at zero or negative, you know, negative whatever, you know, because there's going to be problems with, you know, burying and doing everything else. You might, because if there's no insurance, if, you know, we actually had insurance on here as well. If you don't have insurance, then that means, you know, we're about to have the GoFundMes and everything else to try to bury you and do everything else. So now, not only do we have this whole generation that has to bury you, but now it's setting us so far back that we can't even, you know, build anything for our future generations. Exactly.
Mouthful, especially when it comes to even just burying somebody. It's like $5,000 to $10,000 to bury someone. But when the average American doesn't like has less than $1,000 in savings and there's no insurance, how do you think that's gonna go? So you're gonna go into debt to bury someone. Right. And then we have to deal with there's two aspects of death. There's the emotional side and there's the business side. But we're so busy dealing with the emotional side that we can't deal with the business side. So you said such a mouthful, especially when it comes to insurance. You're going to die. You need to probably have some money available in when you die. Because it's not even if you die, it's when you die. And we talk about it. We easily know like, oh, I have to have car insurance. Oh, I should have, you know, homeowners insurance. You need to have renter's insurance. I know a lot of people don't. I need to have renter's insurance. There's so many insurances that I need to have health insurance. There's so many insurance that are kind of ingrained into our lives as a, I need this just in case something happens. I have car insurance just in case I hit somebody or somebody hits me. I have home insurance. So just in case something happens, I have a fire, I have a flood, some kind of random tree. Because I'm recently in Philly, like all these trees were uprooted. Like we had a really bad storm a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. And it's kind of thing, a random tree falls on my house. What am I going to do?
Right.
Homeowners insurance. So again, we kind of have these insurances just in case, you know, I have health insurance just in case I get sick. So I have all these things that are available in case of, but death is definite and you know, it's final. So you don't have insurance that's going to take care of some financial obligations when you die, and we know it's coming.
Right, exactly. GoFundMe is not an insurance plan.
Big facts. I mean, you can get insurance policies. So there's two basic insurance policies that I even look at, talk about at all. It's your whole life and you have term. And we were talking before the show is that I had to just get I recently got a term policy because we are doing a rehab on a house that I own, completely paid off. But now we're doing a rehab and we are taking on, you know, maybe about 60% of the equity in a loan to get some work done on the property. That being said, my mom and I own it as it's called joint tenants rights of survivorship. So basically we own equal 50% of the property, but if something happens to either one of us, the other one gets the property. So if something happens to my mom, you know, We don't want that to happen. Something happens to my mom, the property becomes to me. Something happens to me, the property goes to her. But I'm the only person that's financing the house, so it's only my debt. She's not financially responsible for it. Right. But she has to acknowledge it. But if something happens to me, she's going to have this debt on there. So we need to make sure that I had a term policy that basically covers the obligation, the loan obligation. So I have we have a 30-year mortgage. So I have a 30-year term policy. We'll pay it off before then, but we have it for the time necessary. So if something happens to her, you know, we're fine. You know, she has her own insurance policies, but as it pertains to this house, we have a term policy because it's a limited amount of time. I have a couple of whole policies, and whole means for your whole life. The reason why I have them is that in Pennsylvania, a lot of people don't know this. A couple other states have it. They have inheritance tax. So anything that I have at death that gets transferred to someone in my family or otherwise, you know, my family or my next door neighbor, they have to pay tax on it unless it's my spouse. So if it goes to my kids, it's 4.5%. If it goes to my siblings, I'm the only child though, 12%. If it goes to anybody else, my cousin or Roscoe down the street, it's 15%. But again, you know, so if you have to pay that, so you have to prepare for those things. Right. So that's kind of part of the generational wealth. It's like, hey, I'm preparing for my child or my children or my grandchildren to make sure that they have at least the ability to cover their assets or their obligations upon my death or my demise. So that's part of it. So we really got to think it through. And I think we were talking about it, like how many people think about it that way. And I think, again, we get so upset about death. I mean, you know, that we just don't kind of prepare for it. Like, I don't know when, you know, I don't know the time, I don't know the hour, I don't know anything about that. But what I can tell you is that it is going to happen. And I'd like to put myself in the best position possible. I have kind of sort of my stuff together, kind of sort of. I mean, in terms of policies, like I have a couple of whole life policies. I do have them together. Like, hey, I gave my dad what's called a financial inventory. And he's like, why are you giving this to me? I said, if something happens to me, you guys need to know where stuff is.
Right.
He looked at me and was like, why are you giving this to me? He said it again. Why are you giving this to me? And I said, again, that's being responsible. Part of generational wealth is, you know, having something to transfer, but the other part of it is not losing it in the process.
Right.
I kind of know where stuff is. And we have a culture that we don't share a lot. That's none of your business. It's not my grown folks' business. And it's like, chill, you know, people aren't unscrupulous, but you know who's unscrupulous and not, granny. You know, so I share that with people is that, you know, we have to be able to protect our assets. Like my grandmother, she's been living in her house since 1958 and she needs to update her kitchen. So if something happens to her, whether, you know, we have to sell the house quickly in terms of, you know, putting her into a home, she's 91. She's fine now, but you know, she's 91. You know, if we have to put her in a home, if she passes away, something like that. I mean, she has insurance and she has coverage across the board. But the bigger issue is that we have to maintain the assets we have too.
Exactly.
You know, so it's not just, you know, it's inventorying. It's kind of like knowing what you have. It's protecting. And then it's also transferring. So it's a big obligation. And then the thing that makes me so frustrated and I get really sad about it is that keeping it funky, we're already coming to the table 400 years behind.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's not that. And we're not going to. And let's be very honest. We're not catching up. You know, unless they give reparations, thank you. Because
unless they're going to have to come with a whole bunch of education because, you know, we've seen it, you know, maybe on like Chappelle or something. It's like you give us the money and we give it right back. You know, that type of thing. Like, wait a minute.
We're like, but it's like a revolving door. No, hold it. But I agree. So we do need financial education. But the thing is that, and I was telling people were asking me, why don't you go back into selling? And going back, what I mean by going into selling, I mean, going back to sell, you know, being a financial advisor. When you're a financial advisor, you kind of basically have like a zip on your mouth about what you can say. So here's the thing that I think that is really frustrating to me personally is that there's not that many of us in the industry. When I was in the industry actively, I was very often the only woman, always the only Black woman in my particular group. but I was sometimes the only woman, sometimes the only Black person. It just depended. So but again, if I'm getting all this information from the industry, but I can't go out and share it because there's so few of us in the industry that actually know, it gives room and space for charlatans just to say whatever. Stuff not true, but they can say it because they're like, well, nobody else is saying anything. This must be true. I've never heard it before. This sounds new. This sounds interesting. I'm going to go with it. And I'm just like, oh, no, no, baby, that's not it. Oh, no, what is you doing?
Exactly.
But I feel like I do that a lot. I mean, we were talking about, they were saying create an LLC for your kid. Why? You should probably create an LLC for yourself, right? Mm. That's what you should do. And then from there, what you can do out of your LLC, once you build it up to be profitable and your child's why, not only are you, I think we're so, I think we want to give our children things that we didn't have, but sometimes the biggest things, and I was telling my dad this just on Father's Day, the biggest things that you can give your child is kind of instilling them good habits and good behaviors.
Right.
Like, and because they watch you, they're watching you more so than anything, they're watching you. So you're showing them like, hey, I'm grinding it out. I have a business, and you get your business to be successful. Then you bring them on and show them the ropes. So even if they don't take on the family business, they still got money in their pocket. And because they're your child, you can pay them up to the standard deduction. And it goes up every single year, tax free. So you can take money out of your business, pay your child. And I was like, oh, no, I'm not giving you this full $12,000 because a portion of this $6,000 is this year, is going into a Roth. And we can use that Roth for education. We can use it for retirement and we can use it for a first time home purchase. So and then on top of that is you can't count retirement assets as part of the expected family contribution for financial aid for college.
Right. See?
You got to line it up. You got to, again, it's about that knowledge. It all starts with the knowledge first. And then it's like, okay, I tell people, you got to learn the rules of the game to play it better than anybody else. Right. So we're coming to the game, and we're already coming into the game handicapped. We are. Right. How do we get ourselves, how do we work smarter, not harder?
Exactly.
That's always going to be my thing. I'm going to work as smart as I can. So that means I'm going to have to learn. I'm going to have to try. And I'm going to have to try by doing. Sometimes I can read every single book in the world.
Right.
And I'm just going to have to get out there and just do it. And I'm like, oh, that didn't work. But one of the things that it didn't work for me, I didn't fail. You know, I didn't fail. I never fail. I either win or I learn. So I'm like, all right, I learned there. Let me, not only do I learn here, but let me share this wealth of information with other people so they don't make the same mistake.
Exactly. And I was going to say exactly that. I mean, one of the best things that we can do is share that knowledge. You know, especially, you know, whether it's with our kids, whether it's with our, you know, our family members, everything, you know, if we have those checklists that we create to say, okay, do we have this? Do we have that? Do I have a will? Do I have, you know, are we setting money aside for retirement? Are we, you know, creating 529 plans for, you know, kids or whomever is going to be in our family that can benefit from it? However, you know, however we're going to work that, right? So doing these different things, having these things set up, getting away from that, well, I don't trust anybody because they're going to try to kill me mentality, because I'm telling you, I've seen it, I've heard it, where, you know, well, I'm not going to tell how much money I got, because it ain't none of their business or whatever. But at the same time, you know, you scrounging around at the last minute once, you know, that person passed away, trying not to, you know, wind up in probate or wind up in, you know, all types of, you know, chaos. Because you don't really know exactly what's going on, you know, where the money is, if they got, you know, bank accounts all over the country or, you know, wherever that no one knows about, you know, and then all, you know, all of those things are being kind of like stolen by the state, you know. So those, you know, those type of things that I think we really need to start having a little bit more, you know, powwows either with our family, whether it's, you know, our direct family, our you know, spouse and kids or whatever. But also, you know, having those kind of like family discussions, you know, and not feeling so much of it's like a taboo subject, you know, like you said, you know, we're going to die. It's just a matter of when, you know, and we're going to need to have that knowledge or have that, you know, that information to say, OK, look, if Uncle Joe passes, you know, what's going to happen? Are we going to sit here, you know, especially if they're up in years, right? You know, and it's like, okay, look, you know, well, it goes for every year. You know, it doesn't matter if you're 30, 32 or 82, right? But at the same time, you know, the ones that are 82, you definitely want to start transitioning and start making things, relative to everyone, where every, you know, that information is relative to everyone, so that, you know, when it does happen, everyone's not kind of like scratching their head trying to figure out exactly what's the next steps.
Right. So Kimberly had a really good point. She said she has an external hard drive with her financial inventory. Yes, that is great. And she said she told her family, she dies before them, go there, and then it has a copy of her will. So here's the thing. Let me share this. Now, in Pennsylvania, it has to be the original copy. They have to be able to feel the ink. Yeah. So, but each state is different because this is a state by state thing. So yeah. I always tell people, have it in a fireproof safe, your originals. And I do a couple, when I do will signings, I do about a couple of, I do maybe about four. So I actually keep one just in case something goes terribly wrong. I have a copy. They have what's called available. It's like a cool, it's like a safe that you can keep off your premises as an attorney. Right. Yeah, and Marisol shared that she was told to sign the original in blue ink. Yes. So signing it in colored ink ensures that it's actually the original yeah. signature. So yeah,
black ink can be anything, right?
Yeah, black ink yeah. can be anything, but you know, so they don't have to go and feel it. They're like, oh, that's blue ink. That's definitely blue ink. We're good. So that's, those are the things. And so a lot of people, I tell people all the time, they everybody likes to DIY. We are very much a DIY society, but here's the thing. Estate planning is not DIY because there's so many things that that can happen in that process that you don't know about. Like, for example, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine and she was like, yeah, I don't have anything. You know, I don't know what my family's going to do. And I said, you don't have anything. Now, she worked at a Fortune 500 company and she was really high up. And I was like, you don't have anything? She's like, no, I don't have a house. You know, the car is leased. And I was like, you have a bank account, though. Yeah. And she was like, of course I do. I said, that's an asset. And she said, oh, you're right. And then she said something. She said, I said, you have a retirement plan, right? She's like, yeah. And I said, that's an asset. And I said, but here's the thing. Your bank account will go through what we consider probate. So that's kind of the court kind of goes through like the process of distributing your assets. But retirement accounts, a lot of stock accounts, most stock accounts are going to go outside of probate. And they're called non-probate assets. So their non-probate assets are going to be assets that are distributed by function of the account. So payable upon death, beneficiary accounts, so insurance policies, retirement, and then by function of law. Like I said earlier, joint tenants with rights to survivorship, like my mom has.
Right.
Me and my mom have that property in. If something happens to one of us, it doesn't matter what the court does, says, whatever, you know. Right. When one of us passes away, then it directly goes to the other one. That's it. Now, when something happens to the second to die, then that's going to go through probate unless there's another conveyance that was done. So Marisol asked a really good question. She said, when do I advise people to update their will? I advise major life events, birth, death, divorce. Mm. But I also tell people to revisit their financial inventory around tax time every single year.
Right.
Kind of updated because stuff changes. But when else are you thinking about your money more so than at tax time? So it's like once you're all in there, you're like, okay, well, let me figure out, because now it's like, let me figure out what I owe Uncle Sam. I've gotten really good. So I had to start doing quarterly payments. Mm. Not a fan of that. But it's not like, what do I owe Uncle Sam? It's like kind of like, I probably shouldn't owe Uncle Sam anything, but let me put some money in retirement just in case.
Exactly.
And I tell people when it comes to taxes, start running your numbers in like October, November. The reason why I do October and November is for this reason. It's a habit. When I was doing high net worth advising, when I worked for Merrill, I was doing, my average account was about $3 million. That's kind of like where we were working at. Right. But I share that to say we would do what's called tax loss harvesting. So you're basically saying, okay, I have a loss. I'm basically harvesting my loss. I like if I have Exxon, I was like, I really bang with Exxon, love Exxon, but Exxon actually took a loss this year that I want to basically take advantage of because I want to offset some gains.
Right. Cool.
So we're going to sell Exxon and we put the money from Exxon in an oil and gas ETF. So we're maintaining the integrity of the portfolio. So the portfolio is basically, this aspect of the portfolio is still in oil and gas, but instead of being in Exxon directly, we're in an ETF. So we're maintaining what their portfolio looks like. Then after 30 days has passed, which is we're getting rid of, it's called the wash rule. The IRS is like, oh, you can sell something today and get back into it tomorrow. We're not going to allow you to take that loss. So no, you got to wait 30 days. So that's the wash rule. So we do it in October, sell it, keep it out. And so at beginning of December, end of November, once we hit that time period, then we end up going back into Exxon. We're able to take the loss. Great. And then we're able to move on. But I say, if you do that planning in October, you're like, oh, I may owe, or A, or oh, I really should make a contribution before December 31st to my my retirement account as a business owner, because that's going to offset some of my tax liability, or I may need to make extra payment or whatever the case may be. But I tell people, especially with taxes, taxes should not be a surprise. It shouldn't be like, ooh.
April 13th, April 14th. Let me go ahead and get these numbers together.
No, you know what's going on before it happens. And if not, get it together. Do it this year. We're not doing anything. Do it this year.
Right. So it's just like, well, there's a death and taxes, something that we know is coming. And we still kind of put it off and, you know, not realizing that it was like, okay, look, we could have been planning for this, you know, like you said, October, November. You already know exactly what you need to start pulling together, you know, and then once, you know, once you start getting those W-2s and everything else around, you know, the end of January, everything is ready. You can just be like, hey, look, I'm good. I'm done.
Right.
And do whatever instead of just, you know, waiting. You know, it's March. You know, it's April. I still got time.
Right.
You know?
I get it because I still haven't filed my taxes. I had time. They told me I had time. So I was like, you have time, I have time.
Yeah.
Exactly. I've been doing so much stuff this year. I am so out of pocket. Property taxes in Philadelphia are due, I believe, March 31st before like the additions happen.
Right.
But they extended the tax deadline. I thought, y'all gonna sit in the tax deadline? So I'm gonna extend this money in my account until you ask for it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you don't need to pay it out now. Now you do have some people who pay quarterly and everything else, so you know you do those type of things. But at the same time, if it's more of a, you know, let me keep this money as long as I can, you know, instead of just kind of like shelling it out, you're like, you don't need it, you know, you print it every day. So what's
up? Well, this is for my property taxes. This is not even by like my IRS taxes. Right. I'm like, listen, let me write you just checks and leave me alone. Exactly. But like our property taxes are due March 31st. I was just like, well, I'm going to keep this money. I may pay it.
Right.
When I like it. I mean, until you ask for it. So you're like, hey, we're charging interest now. But oh, well, let me write you this check then.
Yeah, exactly, right? Oh, yeah. Property tax is totally something different. Ours is a little bit different down here in VA, but it's about the same, you know.
Okay. You're a Commonwealth. Virginia's a Commonwealth, right?
Commonwealth, yep.
I don't really know what the difference. I mean, I'm an attorney. I have no idea between the Commonwealth and not. I don't know. I know this is a Commonwealth. I think Kentucky's a Commonwealth. Virginia's a Commonwealth.
Massachusetts is a fourth one.
Yeah. I think it's all of us.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's only four of us. And it's, VA, PA, MA, and Kentucky. Okay. And which really just means, in my eyes, we can make up the rules as we go. So just, you know, that's kind of how I feel about Commonwealths. You know, it's like we got almost the same rules as states, but at the same time, you know, if we want to go back to some, you know, 1711 rule, yeah, we can go back. We can still use that one too.
Maybe we shouldn't do it this way, y'all.
Yeah,
exactly. We have some really interesting laws on our books still. I'm like, it should probably repeal them. You know, I know we don't enforce them anymore, but just, you know, as a course of business, probably should just repeal them.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things that, especially the way things are going now, and with everything that's happening, you know, the protests, the corona, and everything else that we got going on, we see a lot of changes happening. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them, you know, I'll say for the better. Mm-hmm. You know, it's in at face value is for the better. So we'll see exactly how things are going to play out later. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, those type of things, you know, I think one of the things that I really wanted to touch on is in the face of everything that's happening with, you know, because of the virus, because of, you know, people being unemployed and everything else, probably, you know, some of them, like you said, they probably didn't have $1,000 in their bank account. They didn't have those type of things already, you know, stocked up and everything for that. When it comes to investing and starting to plan or trying to, you know, build for the future, how do you, you know, how do we start talking to people about that? Where it's like, hey, look, you know, I understand that, you know, generational wealth is something that we really need to start thinking about. But at the same time, we've probably taken hits over the last 3 months or, you know, whatever it is right now. We've probably taken hits. How do we still kind of like force that mentality to say, hey, look, it's still a requirement. It's still a necessity to continue to build that, you know, to build that nest egg or build that, you know, to build that that ability to say, all right, I need to set this money aside for this. Or I need to be able to invest in that. How do we approach that, especially as a community?
So I think we talked about it a little bit earlier is that we are behind everybody else. And that's a function of, you know, slavery, and it's a function of what happened after slavery. So it wasn't just slavery. It was what happened after slavery. But I think one of the things that I want to say is that even as much as we want to sprint to the finish line, investing is a marathon and not a sprint. You know, so again, that means that, you know, I was kind of thinking about the tortoise and the hare. It's like actually one of my favorite stories ever, because you assume that the hare is going to like just go off. You know, the hare is going off. He's going to win the race because he's the fastest. But he, you know, he was fast and then he kind of took off and he stopped. He hung out. He did whatever. Right. And the tortoise is just going along step by step by step. And then by the end, guess who won? The tortoise. Right. But I share that with us is that, again, is that we have to be really careful of staying away from get rich quick schemes. Right. You know, we have to really spend time and educate ourselves. And a lot of people are saying, well, Courtney, how do I get started in investing? Invest in what you know. And it's not necessarily like stuff that you use, because if you use it, you know, you kind of have a good idea of what it, you know, what the company is. Like I have an Apple phone, I have them on my Mac, I have an Apple Watch, you know? Right. So there are certain things about a company, I'm like, okay. And I've been using Apple products since I was in elementary school. We had an Apple IIe playing the Oregon Trail. So
yeah, I remember that.
I don't know. But, I share that to say, I know this company, I've grown up with this company. Why would I not consider, I don't really like their price right now, but I did invest in them early in the pandemic and I'm good. Yeah. But I do share that, why would I not invest in a company that I've had that much experience with and so many good experiences with?
Right.
That's kind of where you start. But then also, you know, I was telling people, I'm not down for this. I'm going to give you this disclaimer, but I'm going to share you with what my thought process was. So I don't know if anybody remember 2016, President Obama's Department of Justice said, hey, we're no longer using any private prisons. And all the private prison stocks dropped in like, I don't know, like the day, and 60% that day. And I'm fine. But one thing that I knew, because I'm a government attorney, I don't work for the federal government, so I'm not giving no secrets away, but I'm a government attorney. So I was like, well, that's interesting, because the DOJ is not the biggest government entity that has or uses private prisons. Right. It's ICE, which is Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Mm. And I said, well, ICE, where are you at? I'm looking for ICE. I'm looking for ICE's statement. And the thing is, as a government attorney, if two agencies are going to come out or, you know, take the same stance, they usually do a joint statement or right after each other. Right. And I'm looking for ICE. The next day comes, nothing. Next week come, I'm fine. So like 2 weeks later, and this is like two, 2 weeks later, they come out with a, we're not doing anything. We're staying the course. Right. I thought that was the art. It's an artificial drop. People got excited, got upset and ran because they don't understand how these companies are set up, who their major, you know, their major contributor is. I said, okay. So I said, it's my mom. So I run my mom's retirement. I said, listen, I'm not with this, mommy. I think this is really messed up, but I see this opportunity. Do you mind if I get in? We're not going to stay in long. I'm going to get in, get out. And I said, but I don't know when they're going to figure it out, because basically the market had to figure it out that they got it wrong. Right. I didn't know when they were going to do it. So I was like, all right. So I couldn't do an option, because normally I would do an option on that. So basically I had the option. I can, you know, go with it up, whatever, and we're good. But I was like, oh, I don't know what they're going to do. So she said, listen, just as long as you get in, get my money and get out, because I'm not with it. And I was like, all right, cool. So ends up, so that was August of 16. We got in maybe, I think, October or September of 16. I honestly went back and forth about, like, I'm really cool with this. But, and then we ended up getting out in February of 18. But the day that President Trump was elected, it went up $7 a share. So again, you know, we more than doubled our money. We got out. Got, see you later. But again, it's about understanding, investing in what you know. Because I knew those things kind of intrinsically. I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Let me look into it some more. And I did. And it was exactly what I thought. So one of the things is that one of the things that I love about being Black and being around Black people is that we can tell BS.
Right.
We really can. And my grandmother used to say, I can look through water and see dry land. Y'all better credit my grandmother for it, y'all. I hear it on the streets. I'm like, I know my grandmother said that. But I say that to say, we can see the trend before it happens. Matter of fact, we set the trend. So why not invest in the trend that you're setting? One of the things that I invested in, and I mean, I feel like, I don't know. I mean, I invested in with Netflix. It was Netflix. It was like 2014, 2015, somewhere around then. Because everybody was talking about what? Netflix and chill.
Right.
Netflix and chill. I didn't have a Netflix account, but it, every time I turned around, somebody was talking about Netflix and chill. I was like, everyone? I was like, let me look up this company. And I think it was like $100 a share. I was like, Netflix? Now I'm looking at Netflix like, Netflix! But I saw that it was an opportunity because, again, we like to be entertained. We like, and we're starting to get, it's basically an extension of the microwave mentality that we have. I want to see a movie. I want to see a movie now. Right. Okay. You didn't want to go to, you're not going to Redbox. You're not going to Blockbuster. You turn on your computer, turn on your TV. You can watch Netflix, whatever you want.
Exactly.
And then now that we have the pandemic, you can't go to the movies. So what are you going to do? Watch it on Netflix. So again, it's kind of those opportunities of, you don't have to know everything.
Right.
You just don't. But as long as you're consistent, so I tell people what's called dollar cost average. So dollar cost averaging is you invest the same amount of money on a regular time period or regular time basis. So if I get paid every 2 weeks, I put $50 aside, and that's what I use to invest in the market. So one day I may get 2 shares, maybe I may get 1 share, I may get 10 on another day, but I'm building my wealth. And as long as I'm consistent, that's what's going to make the difference. But a lot of people are like, I'm going to invest $5,000 today. Okay. And then what do you, and then next thing I know, they're like, I'm taking $3,000 out. Okay. Right. But remember the tortoise and the hare, you know? So, you know, I had somebody who says, I'm going to put in $500 every single month for 10 months. Or I have somebody who's going to say, I'm going to put in $5,000 now. And then, you know, 10 months from now, they have to take $3,000 out. So who's up?
Right.
The person with $5,000 who's been contributing $500 every single month for the last 10 months.
Right. And I think that's one of the things that, like you mentioned before, that a lot of people think is like a get rich quick scheme type of thing. Or, you know, they're not looking at the longevity of investing in stocks. Right. I think Warren Buffett's like is more of you getting a piece of that company. Right. And a lot of people are not thinking about exactly what they're getting into. It's just like, OK, look, you know, they're probably not really, you know, savvy around when it comes to stocks. And it's like, okay, well, I'm gonna try to get in a day and probably, you know, first off rip, become a day trader. Mm-hmm. And like, wait, what? How are you gonna be a day trader? And you ain't Yeah, no, you need to learn the basics first. Mm-hmm. Know exactly what you're doing before you start trying to be a day trader, right? And now we have a lot of different things out there, a lot of apps where you're going to have those Robin Hoods, mm-hmm. you know, stashing the things. I think that's a great way for people to start getting involved in stocks, and at the same time, kind of understanding a little bit about it. I know a lot of people are not big fans of fractional shares, but I would, you know, I kind of, you know, I tell people about it. Like, if you can't afford the entire stock, you know, go for it, you know, go for a fractional share, at least, especially if something is paying a dividend or whatever, right? You know, so you can have that money that's building on top of money. And the only reason I say that, because I'm very, you know, I'm big into Bitcoin as well. So mm-hmm. some of the, you know, the crypto stuff where you, it's the same type of mentality of saying, okay, well, maybe I can afford a $9,000 Bitcoin. Maybe I can get a fractional share of a Bitcoin and then, you know, still make money off of that. So I think there's a lot of different ways for people to start assessing the stock market and trying to get in it. But I think it all boils down to, you know, trying to reach out to someone like yourself that has that knowledge that says, okay, this is, you know, there's no need to be afraid of it. You know, because I think a lot of us is like, look, I ain't putting my money in there. You know, the first thing you hear, it dropped yesterday. You know, long game. It's a long game. Please, people, it's a long game. You know, it's, you know, those type of things. It's like, you know, having, you know, stock in like BP or something like that, where, you know, it's not going anywhere. You know, some of these stocks are, you know, they might go up or down, you know, here and there for a couple of days or, you know, a couple of months. Whatever, but at the same time, long game. You know, it's been around for 100 years. You know, whatever, right? You know, it's just,
I'm like, well, and there's times that I'm teaching a stocks 101 class, like a month long class, right now. And one of the things I'm talking to my students about, one of my big things is that I'm like, hey guys, there's times that you have to leave a company alone. You know, and I tell people that all the time. It's like a bad relationship. You're like, you know what? We got to part ways, boo. It's not you. And I did that with GE. So I purchased GE 2007, 2008, somewhere around them. Mm. Rocking with them, or maybe it was 2009. It was somewhere back then. But, yeah. You know, rocking with them for a while. And then I started noticing that they, I saw a headline. I wasn't paying attention because unless I am doing options, I'm not paying attention to the market. Just keep this. People were like, Courtney, did you know the market did blah today? I was like, oh, you don't know? And I'm like, I wasn't trading options today. I said, I think I saw an indicator that the market was sideways, so I was not in there. Yeah. Unless I know, I'm not in there. Because I don't like money. But I share that with you is that GE, there was a headline that said GE posted like a really large loss. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, GE. That's not good because I only have you. I mean, I mess with you because you bring good things to life, but I have you because of your dividend. So you should be cutting, in my head, I'm like, you should be cutting your dividends. If you posted a loss, that means you don't have profits. Dividends are profits and earnings. Cool. So if your profits and earnings go down, then what should go down to? Dividends. And then their dividend didn't go down at all. And I was like, I'm going to leave y'all alone. Because GE was a very big dividend company for a lot of pension funds and all this other stuff. So they had invested interest in paying a dividend, even if they couldn't afford it. And I was like, you know who doesn't have invested interest in you guys paying a dividend and you can't afford it? Me. Because if you don't got it, you don't got it. And it ain't tricking if you got it. But if you ain't, you know. So I say that to say I had to leave them alone. You know, I had to really like get out. And thankfully I did, because I got it out, and then it like dropped when they finally declared that their dividend was going to go down. Then guess what happened? So did the stock price. Mm. Because everybody's thinking about, well, your dividends go down, then what's going on with your profits and earnings?
Right.
They've been told you, boo, that they didn't have the profits and earnings. You just weren't paying attention.
Right.
So.
Yeah. All right. So I want to touch on this because a lot of people decided to, you know, jump in on Hertz a couple of weeks ago. Yes. they decided to jump in on Hertz. I know, especially with the put options, right? But or actually, it was a car options, I believe. It went to the moon, and then
I was like,
they was bankrupt. But whatever, you know.
That's the problem. So that's exactly the point about education. When a company goes bankrupt, they're worthless. They don't. But no one seemed to understand because everybody's thinking, so they pick up. So that tells you how stuff is so catchy. Buy low, sell high. They're like, well, Hertz is low. I should buy it. Hertz is broke. They're so broke that they have to get the government involved to clean up their mess, aka bankruptcy. And that's not saying bankruptcy is bad. Sometimes you just have to reorganize.
Right.
So it's not shade or anything like that. But again, that doesn't mean that you go chase them down off the cliff, y'all. Yeah. That's what a lot of people did. They just chased it off the cliff. And I'm just sitting there like, oh no. But see, if I realized that's what they were doing, I would have done a call option too.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Oh, believe me. I didn't touch it. Everybody else was like, hey, 300%. I'm like, that's cool.
I know. I should have, let me tell you how I messed up on a call option a couple of weeks ago. So I got an ACB call option before they did their reverse split.
Yep, love ACB.
I was doing it. So, and I told my fiance about it. I said, listen, I think the stock's going to pop up once they clear up their when they get back, you know, in good graces, I'll say. Because let me just, for people who don't know, ACB is Aurora Cannabis, which is like the number three, it kind of by market cap is number three Canadian cannabis company in Canada. So basically, it's the number three cannabis company in the world because Canada is the only place that's actually open for business. So just put this in perspective. Right. So they had some interesting. What happened? Oh, okay, we're back. Okay, they had some really interesting. I forgot. Was it one of their C-suite? Something in your C-suite was doing something they had no business doing. What I don't remember. So their stock took a really large hit. Okay, fine. But when the cannabis companies kind of weren't doing that well as old, because everybody was kind of like, well, what y'all doing over there? We see that Canada's open, and then they kind of opened their second phase of availability. So they first started basically like with the leaf, the plant, but then in seeds, and then they moved on to edibles in their second phase. So they're like, okay, but we're still not really seeing the growth we expected. But Canada only got three people, y'all. What you expecting? Three people are only taking but so much weed. Now they're doing well, but I think everybody's expecting U.S. numbers up in Canada, but it's just not happening, especially with no one traveling through COVID. You know, you're just not going to get it. But anyway, ACB dropped below $1 a share. They are traded on the New York Stock Exchange.
Right.
New York Stock Exchange, part of its response is a privilege of being traded there. One of the responsibilities of a company that's traded there is they have to remain above $1 a share to remain listed on the New York Stock Exchange.
Right.
But if you get kicked off the New York Stock Exchange, it's pretty much like death for your company. So to put that in perspective, they did a reverse split to basically elevate their company. So it's kind of like, if you ever think about like cookies, when I make cookies for the kids, I make them in little balls. But sometimes somebody wants to be special and they want to have three balls and make it into one cookie. That's basically what the reverse split is. Right. They're like three balls made into one cookie. But in this particular instance, I think it was 12-1. 12 balls into one cookie. That was our reverse split. So it elevated the price. But that same weekend, I don't remember what happened in cannabis world, but it shot up. So I did $40 in options on ACB. Mm. Shot up to $1,000. But I, not understanding the whole split process, I wasn't in the money in my option, but I was my option was killing it on the market. So it hopped up to $1,000. So my fiance is like, what are you going to do? You want to get out? I was like, no, I can really make money on this, but I didn't calculate the split issue. And he put in, I think, $20 and walked away with like $180. And I was looking at, he was like, I didn't even know what I was doing. I was just listening to you. And I was like, okay. And he's like, well, do it again. Listen, you got to know what you're doing. Like, I knew I was going to ACB, but had I knew I was doing the whole time, I would have taken my $1,000 and left, but I didn't. So I ended up, my option expired worthless, but that's my story. I had to share that with people.
Yeah, yeah.
Even the people that know what they're doing sometimes don't know what they're doing. And that's me. That was me. So I did end up making money. I did, I think I put in 40 and I think I walked away with 60. So it wasn't, I didn't lose money.
Right.
The opportunity was right and I didn't
seize it. Exactly. And you know how it is, especially when it's all the way up here and like, look, you can still go higher. I'm like, instead of just walking away.
But I thought I was in the money. I really thought I had to end the money and I thought I was gonna, like, but I wasn't in the money based on all the numbers. And I was like, darn it. So had I run the numbers properly, I would have known I wasn't in the money based on this, on the reverse split. And I would have just taken my $1,000 and went home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, you know what? I saw that notice. It was saying, hey, you got till like Monday and it's going to be 12 to 1. And I missed that notice. Otherwise, I would have jumped on some more. But yeah, it's, you know, some, like you said, some days you got so much stuff going on. I don't have time to be looking at every little alert and every little thing on every stock or something that you're investing in sometimes, you know. I mean, sometimes you, when you go back and look, like, oh, yeah, I could have came up on this one. But
and I was thinking that, too, with Juneteenth. Because a lot of people were like really getting excited about just shopping black and like other people were getting excited. I'm just like, this is telling me something. And I couldn't place in my head. I was like, I could have invested in Radio One and got my money and rolled out. Right. You know, there was a lot of places where there were opportunities. So there's always an opportunity in the market. This market has gotten quite crazy, but there's always opportunities in the market. I share that with people all the time.
Right. So what is one avenue that, you know, people should start to, you know, start to look into whether it's going to be getting involved in the stock market, you know, the knowledge part, you know, is it just, you know, taking a class? I know you have a month long class going on now, right? What is the next one coming up?
So I have a Stocks 101 on demand that you can basically take at your leisure, but I have like a interactive class that that's going on right now. Okay. My favorite book is One Up on Wall Street, which is by Peter Lynch. It's kind of, it's a relatively quick read. I would pretty much start there because it's pretty much, he says the same thing I talk about. Like, hey, you know, go pay attention to stuff because stuff that's under your nose, you may like, hey, I'm really interested in this. Like you start seeing a certain type of company keep popping up. You're like, why are you popping up? What's going on? What should I know about you? And then you start researching them. You visit the company, you eat their food. You're like, this food is excellent or whatever it may be. And you're like, the service is excellent. And then you invest in them and you're like, you know, 10 years later, you're like, hey, I was really right about the company that I did that research on that I started seeing pop up everywhere.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I was gonna say, like, some of the people that, like, as soon as this Corona hit, they jumped on Zoom. You know, they jumped on Zoom. You know, because, yeah, it's right under your nose. Literally, you're gonna be using it all the time for people that's working from home and doing whatever. But they also, you know, you also needed to look about Microsoft Teams. You know, looking at Microsoft stock as well, because a lot of people are doing a lot the same thing. Whether it's gonna be on Zoom, whether it's gonna be on WebEx, or you know, any of those techie stocks, those type of things that you're really going to start looking at. Just saying, you know, if you understand that a lot of stuff is starting to go into AI or that, you know, I'm a tech guy too, so I'm all in that. So if I'm leaning too much into tech, you understand why. It's just like, all right, you see what's going on. This machine learning, this AI, this facial recognition, all this stuff is going on.
Data center REITs. So a lot of people are like, oh, you know, I'm using my technology a lot more. Oh, are you? So they're going to have to house it somewhere. Data center REITs, which are real estate investment trusts. Look them up.
Right.
5G. I mean, I know we had the whole 5G conspiracy earlier this year. Okay. But I think that's also a conversation to have because 5G is coming. And as a government attorney, I was looking at it was in front of the Ninth Circuit, maybe in February, about, you know, how much a municipality or a town can charge a data provider for putting up small cells. And it might have been the FTC. It was one of them. They're all blend together to me. One of the government agency said you can have to cap it at 270. And so again, if you're capped at 270, how many small cells do you think that these companies are going to put up? Right. A whole bunch. But if it's not capped at 270, something closer to 500, then I think it's going to be proportionally reduced. But they're saying, well, we need more small cells because the 5G waves are so short, is that you need more kind of points.
Right.
So we're having those conversations. So I was listening to the Ninth Circuit argument about does the, I think it's the FTC, do they have the ability to regulate private commerce that way? Mm-hmm. Between, like, you know, between two parties, because they're putting on like light poles and it's indiscriminate where they put it. So if right. I have my courthouse, my beautiful courthouse, and I have these beautiful decorative old 1895 lights, and then here you come with your 5G power, what do you think is going to happen? You're messing up my stuff.
Right, exactly.
You know, they're paying, so, and they're not even compensating the, me as a municipality for getting my stuff messed up. So wait, what part of the game is that? So that is a big thing that was in front of them. I don't know how it was decided, but that's going to determine how 5G is proliferated, you know, at least in the Ninth Circuit, if not all over the country while we're looking at it.
Right.
So I have a 5G class. I have to redo it. So I'm going to clean it up a little bit. But I talked about that because it's just a really interesting thing. And technology is it. And we were talking about, you know, defensive versus cyclical industries.
Right.
And a defensive industry is an industry that just does well, whatever. Like, it's when times are good, it's like this. When times are bad, it's like, well, I should say like this. Times are good, it's like this. Times are bad, it's like this. It's kind of, you know, but usually decent dividends, kind of older companies. But then you have these cyclical companies that kind of go up and down with the market. So the market's up, these companies are up. Market's down, these companies are down. And because it goes like a little ping pong ball, which is cool. But those types of defensive, I mean, I should say cyclical stocks are going to be banks. They're going to be, they had telecom as a cyclical stock. Mm-hmm. I don't think telecom is cyclical anymore. We're so reliant on it. I think it's going to be a defensive, like, doesn't matter what's going on. I still got my phone. I still going to need my phone, you know, but 10 years ago, it was a completely different idea. Not everybody needed a phone. Now everybody has a cell phone.
Right. Everybody, kids, mamas, grandmamas, everybody has a cell phone.
Mm-hmm. And it's utility now. So utilities used to be are considered defensive. I think telecom is too, or should be.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I'm all for it. You know, honestly, so like I said, I could talk forever about tech, but I'm going to try not to. I'm going to try and just stay away from it. But, yeah, tech stocks and, you know, that looking in that industry, looking into what you use on a constant basis, you know, some of these things is going to make a lot more sense for you to whether you're going to be something that you're going to look to invest in or just, you know, understand exactly how things are working and may, you know, give you that light bulb a little bit later to say, hey, look, this is, you know, this is possibly a way that's going, and, you know, the trend as it's going. Like I said, there's going to be a lot of things that we're seeing, whether it's going to be the 5G, the, you know, a lot of the sales services and everything else that everyone is completely reliant upon. Mm-hmm. IoT is, you know, really big. Everything is connected to each other. It's Internet of Things, right? So
the Internet of Things.
The TV is connected to your refrigerator, connected to your car, connected to your watch, right? Those type of things. Everything's connected. So, you know, those type of, you know, those ideas and, you know, it gives you an idea of exactly what's going on and what's coming up. So it gives you a little like blueprint of what you can prepare for in the future. All right, let's see. I swear we got we've gone through a lot of different topics here. So, but I want to make sure everyone knows how to get in contact with you. The IVInvestor.com. I believe you have some of your courses and stuff on there as well, right? What else is all on there?
Some blog posts. Actually, part of this year, I was like, Courtney, we got to start writing again. So I've done, I did a couple of pieces. I have some decent pieces up. I have a good share of stuff. I did a piece on Uber when Uber IPO'd. I just do a lot of kind of things that people are talking about. I'm probably going to do a piece on Hertz because people just are still confused about what happened and what about like what should have happened versus, you know, what did happen.
Right. So. And then you're also available on IG and Twitter at the Ivy Investor.
Yep.
You also have your courses.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The ivyinvestor.teachable. That's the-ivy-investor.teachable.com. You have a lot of, like I said, you have a lot of stuff going on. I'm hoping that we can come back and talk to you more about a lot of different stuff that you're talking about, especially ACB and all of the good stuff that that deals with. Because, you know, like I said, we have a lot to talk about, and we have a lot of different topics. Different topics we can talk on. So hopefully you can come back another time and we can talk about that as well.
Of course. Whenever you'd like to have me back, it'd be great.
That's awesome. All right. Well, we thank you for being here. We thank you for teaching us all about estate planning, stocks, all the good stuff that you've been doing over, you know, everywhere. You just got so much stuff going on. So make sure you follow her on IG and Twitter. And I want to also thank everyone. I want to put this slide back up again for all of the sponsors that has been here with us for the last 10 weeks. Thank you. We could not have done this without you. Look forward to doing some new things for the next season. So when, you know, we'll definitely have you back on here again, Courtney. And if you enjoyed this broadcast, make sure you support the show. You can go to Cash App, Cash More Owned. Everything is scrolling across the bottom. Or if you are a crypto person, you can donate on crypto at fredbrandon.info. Thank you once again, and we appreciate just you being here with us this evening.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. We had a great conversation.
All right. Thanks. Thank you. All right. We will see you soon. All right. Thanks, everyone.